Welcome to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. Here's Connie.
Welcome to Enlightenment of Change on webtalkradio.net. I'm your host, Connie Whitman. As always, thanks so much for joining us. Now, I hope as you listen to the show every week, you feel my mission to change that word sales or the perception of the word sales from kind of icky, sleazy manipulation to really one of love, care, and respect. So every time we're dealing with clients or prospects or our bosses or our peers or anybody in life, we should really be speaking from that respectful perspective. So to help you understand your natural communication superpowers, as well as spotlighting your blind spots, maybe you don't know that it could be a challenge for you because you're not aware of it. It's a blind spot. I'm offering my free communication style assessment, and you will get those two reports, superpowers and blind spot. Go to whitmanassoc.com/CSA. And that is my free gift to you. And I hope it helps you change your mindset around that word sales. Now, my motivational quote today is by Marshall B. Rosenberg. And Marshall says, "We are dangerous when we are not conscious of our responsibility for how we behave, think, and feel." Now, I really love this quote as it allowed me the opportunity to reflect as I got the show notes together and reflect on my career and look at my personal evolution of becoming more emotionally intelligent and the impact it's actually had on my life and career. Now, I have come to realize, you know, you have to be honest with yourself, right? So I've come to realize that this was a skill I actually had to learn and develop over time and was not a natural thing for me. So what were some of the big lessons I learned? You know, I learned things like, how do you become empathetic by connecting, for me, deeply with my clients, right, through my corporate career, then deeply with my sales teams when I got into sales management, then deeply with my husband and kids, right, when the whole family dynamic can, and now deeply with my clients as a business owner. And as I look back, I personally understand the importance and the beauty of being an emotionally intelligent leader in our world. Now, we have multiple roles in life, and emotional intelligence, I think, or, you know, EI, EQ, it's called multiple things. I think it helps us with everything we do and every person we engage with. So what's the impact? Just greater and deeper communication and connections with those around us, again, both personally and professionally. It matters, right? Well, today, of course, I have an amazing guest. We're going to have an awesome conversation. My guest is Liz Cruz. Liz is the founder and principal of Liz Cruz Consulting. I was going to say constructing, Liz. Isn't that funny? Prior to leading her practice, Liz spent over 10 years in the corporate space, specifically retail and technology, and as a coach, leadership development program leader, or an organizational effectiveness consultant. Now, Liz enjoys working with a diverse mix of clients. A special area for focus for her is the LGBTQ leadership development pathway. Liz approaches is informed by her deeply, notice that word today, deeply held belief that each of us is inherently brilliant and that the best solution to our leadership challenges are found in our deep knowledge of ourselves. She's an eternal optimist, a queer leader fanatic, a frequent teller of not that funny jokes, a lifelong artist, and current love. She loves watercolors, relentlessly curious, a deep empath, and despite all outwardly appearances, definitely an introvert, which I didn't believe, and you'll see why. Liz, thank you so much for being on the show, and I love your bio.
Oh, thanks, Connie. I am so excited to be here with you.
Yes, I still don't believe you're an introvert.
Oh, well, yeah, it's I consider myself a gregarious introvert. I love people. I love being around people, and then when I'm done, I need a nap.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. Right. It can be extremely exhausting. So you have to watch your energy level. Yeah. Beautiful. I love that. So let's start. I gave my perspective, right, that I knew I had to learn emotional intelligence, and I know what that means for me, but let's, for everybody listening, can you define how you see emotional intelligence and maybe the impact or importance that you've learned through the years?
Yeah, absolutely. So my simplest definition of emotional intelligence is there is a lot of emotional information out in the world, inside of ourselves, in our relationships and our interactions. And our emotional intelligence is our ability to make sense of that emotional information and to use it effectively as we're in our internal process, as we're communicating with other people, building relationships, making decisions, managing our stress load. The better we can use that emotional information, the better off we are as leaders and just human beings.
So I'll tell you a story. It's a very sad story. It's honest, though. I'm going to be very honest about my journey with emotional intelligence to build on what you just said. When I first started out in sales, I loved being with the client and educating. So sales to me is education, right? So of course I was empathetic because I had to stop and listen and understand their situation. As soon as I was promoted into leadership, and I remember my first coaching session, the young lady, totally opposite style of mine, communication style to mine, like what I, my gift that I start with. And I remember she started crying. She was upset about something, probably her numbers or whatever. And I'm not a beat up kind of person, right? Never was. And this is exactly what went through my head. And I remember I was in my late 20s, but this is what went through my head, Liz. Oh my God, she's crying. What do I do? And she's crying. So I don't know what to do. So I think, do I reschedule? Do I tell her, suck it up? Literally going through my head. Finally, I grabbed the tissues. I put it in front of her. I go, do you need a tissue? That's all I could get out of my mouth because now she's inconveniencing my schedule, right? I have other people to coach. How dare she cry? Why are you crying? I'm not yelling at you. So all of this angst that I'm feeling, finally, I did say to her, I think we should reschedule because two things were happening. I'm like, you're crying. Oh my God, go pull yourself together. Pull your big girl pants up and move forward, right? Well, that's not how she was and how she, you know, framed her thinking. So when I reflect on that story, right, I realize, oh my God, that was horrifying. What a horrible person I was. And it wasn't a horrible person. I didn't know any better. I had to learn because after she left, of course, my heart broke and she let me know why she was upset. And it was an emotional thing that was happening in her life. And as a human, I felt bad, but I thought, wow, you went to the dark place of get out of my office. You're crying. I don't have time for this. Horrifying. I would never behave that way now, but we have to learn and evolve because it matters. And once I realized and learned, plus it was fun for me to come from this place of love, care, and respect, like I had with my clients. Now I just had to do the same with my employees, right? But you have to learn that and pivot that skill a little bit. So yeah, horrifying, horrifying. And for any leader that does that, shame, no shame, just don't do it. Right. Go ahead, Liz. Yeah. I know you want to comment.
Yeah. Well, you know, I want to say a couple of things. First, I think you've hit on something really important, which is that, you know, you and your listeners know that if we're hired to drive sales, what we're really being hired to do is build relationships.
100%.
If we're hired to lead a team, if we're hired to lead a project, if we're managing people, what we are really hired to do is build relationships. And to help the team deliver the project, the initiative, the sales numbers, whatever it is, through those relationships. And that is a lesson, you know, I'm not surprised by your story, Connie, because every leader I know has a story like that. When I first started managing people, I didn't know. I thought I was there to enforce the rules.
That's right.
Right. I thought I was there to hold people accountable. I thought I was there to, you know, the first team I ever led, I had 80 direct reports. This was in a retail space. So it was a massive team. And there was absolutely a team like that. You can see your job as I'm here to hire, to keep attendance, to do disciplinary action, to kind of to manage the goings on of the team.
Schedule, payroll. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When we make that shift and we learn, I am here to help these people be at their best, to remove barriers, to create a space for this team where they can do their best work.
Yeah.
Then we do better, right? So, you know, I think in those moments, and if you had a time machine, you probably would go back to, I think you said your late 20s, and do that moment differently.
Yes.
For anyone who's listening, who's facing, you know, kind of a, who might be in that place themselves, I'll tell you, and this is a great sort of emotional intelligence trick. All you have to do when someone is having an emotional reaction like that is acknowledge it and validate it.
Yep.
That's it. All you have to say is, wow, I can see that this has really touched you emotionally. I can see that you're having a lot of emotion right now. And, you know, maybe it's a stressful situation and this is part of this person's stress response. You can just say, this is a stressful situation. It makes sense that you'd have a lot of emotion about it. And that's all you have to do. And that can help sort of discharge, let that person just have that emotional response. Because often, you know, if we're the one sitting on the other side of that conversation, we're thinking, I better stop crying. This person's going to kick me out of their office.
That's right.
Right. I better keep myself under control, because our work environments are not often conducive to holding our full emotional selves. And we are emotional beings first and foremost, whether we want to believe that about ourselves or not.
It's important. It affects every relationship in our life. And some people are just natural. I have a son, he's extremely empathetic and emotionally aware and feels other people. And I watch him, I observe him, and I think, wow, I wouldn't have done it that way. How would I have done it? Why would I have done it? Can I do it more like him? How would I do it more like him? So you learn from those examples. And I've learned from, and I know you've had this too, Liz, right? I've had in my 20 years in corporate, I had two good managers, no joke, right? And I've had a dozen, probably more managers through that period of time. The rest, I learned what not to do and how to avoid to duplicate the punitive conversations and the ways they just put you down, and it's not okay, right? So that's why it's funny. I was annoyed with that, not at the person, at the situation of, oh my God, there's tears now. What do I do? I got five things I got to get done. So what was my reaction? I was feeling stress and pressure. And as soon as I released and said, okay, let's reschedule it, it freed me up to breathe, but it allowed her to say, okay, she sees me, she hears me. She's not like, suck it up and be a big girl, right? I let her feel her feeling. That was intuitive. I will say that piece of it, but still I really wanted to say, oh my God, just get out of my I get out of my office. Horrible. Again, horrible. So I think that the more we talk about this stuff and share these examples, horrifying, and as well as the good examples, it gives, like watching my son, right? I think it gives us alternatives and perspective and an opportunity to say, ooh, that's a trigger. That's a heat trigger, right? It's not just going with the flow. What's going on here? And it's impacting the engagement I'm having with, and hopefully this person in front of me. Right.
Yeah. I love that, because I hear you talking about actually a number of different emotional intelligence skills. And the other thing I'll say about EQ is, a lot of times, you know, if I go and ask 10 people, what do you think emotional intelligence is?
Yes.
It generally, the answers sort of boil down to, emotional self-awareness. I know what I'm thinking, or know what I'm feeling when I'm feeling it.
Yes.
Sometimes emotional expression will come out. I can express my emotions in a way that doesn't harm other people. And empathy comes out every single time, right? It's that ability to be empathetic, to recognize, to read the room and recognize what other people are feeling. In the model of emotional intelligence I work with, those are 3 of 15 skills, right? And so
that's incredible.
So, you know, it's not, I think we often think, oh, that person is emotionally intelligent, or they're not. But what I just heard you say was, what I wanted to say, get out of my office, and I didn't. So that's impulse control. which is an emotional intelligence, is an EQ skill, that ability to control our impulses,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. That ability to then like stop and reflect and recognize, okay, that didn't go the way I wanted it to. I've never been in that situation before. How will I do it differently next time? Connects to self-actualization. How do I become a better leader? How do I reflect on my experiences and become the leader I want to be? And then, of course, how you talk to yourself as a leader in that moment. Do you shame and blame yourself? Do you get hard on yourself? Or can you be empathetic with yourself and say, well, gosh, I didn't know what to do. And how could I? I've never been in that situation before. I see my strengths. I see my weaknesses. I still hold a positive self-regard. That self-regard is also an EQ skill, right? And every single one of us has all 15 of these skills to one degree or another, right?
Sure.
And some were higher at and some were lower. Someone sure. who's got really high ability to be assertive and really low impulse control, well, that might not be a useful combination. That might get us right. into some trouble. Right.
Yeah.
But if we can sort of temper that, right. And sort of control that impulse and be more effectively assertive, that's where we start to see real growth as leaders, is when we can use all of those skills in concert with one another.
See, now I didn't realize there were 15. So, you know, it's like people say, I want to get better at sales. And I think, oh, but sales is such a big topic. Let's dig in. Because I'm telling you, 80% of your sales skills are great. It's that 20%. We need to figure that out, dig in and work on that. It's not sales, right? It could be just communication. It could be their presentation. Could be they're not asking enough questions. So there's so many sub skills. It's the same thing I'm hearing now with EQ, emotional intelligence, you know, 15 sub skills. And again, I've never been trained on emotional intelligence. This is just kind of learning, watching and applying, but I am very self-reflective. And again, this to me is a natural thing. When I started my sales career, after every meet, I had a drive and we had maps and we didn't have GPSs or cell phones. So when I got in the car and we didn't have 3000 XM Sirius XM stations, we had like 7. So when I got in the car, I had time to think because I didn't have all of these other stimuli hitting me. So I would sit, hey, that went really well. Why did that really go well? Can I duplicate that? Or, wow, that was like an epic fail. Where did I derail myself? Right. That was really bad. Let's not do that again. And how could I have done it better? So that self-reflection, again, for me, and I feel bad because I know, you know, people commuting now to Manhattan, they're listening to podcasts, you know, they're on to the next phone call, they're checking their emails. We don't have time to pause and do that reflection. And I will tell you, Liz, that served me well. I think I really started understanding what my strengths were, but I really started seeing that, wow, that's a challenge for you, man. You need to work on that. They said this, that triggered you. Who are you? They're the client. Like, suck it up, figure it out. So that self-reflection, I think we're lacking, but I had no idea there were 15 quote unquote sub skills to emotional intelligence. That's fascinating.
Yeah. It's a really rich field. So when I work with my coaching clients or when I work with teams,
yeah,
almost every single time we start with an emotional intelligence assessment that yeah. measures these 15 skills so that we can get kind of a baseline and figure out
clarity
to work on. That's right. Yeah.
It's just clarity. I have to understand the concept before I could start to use it and apply it. Right. That's what we're talking about. That again, reflection about who am I? And here's the other thing too. And do you find that the people you work with, they take this assessment, clearly, you know, again, there might be some, depending on their mood or whatever that day, if they were tired, et cetera, there might be a little bit of fluctuation, but at the core, I would bet it's pretty spot on. Do they embrace it? Do they fight you and argue, oh no, I'm not like that. Or do you feel like when, by the time they're with you, they're ready to hear the truth?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, when I work with my coaching clients, I'm very specific about who I take on. I don't work with coaching clients who are not ready to create radical transformation in their lives and in their leadership. When I work with teams, you don't, you know, my partner and I will be hired in to work with a full team of people. The leader of the team, maybe our HR partner, the folks we're contracting with see the value. They know that this is important work. And sure, there might be one person in the room who gets their report and looks at it and thinks, yeah, this is totally useless. I'm going to recycle it as soon as I walk out of this room. And that, you know, of course, as a facilitator, as a practitioner, that can be hard, but not everybody is always ready. And sometimes, you know, one of the things that I look at when I look at a report before I debrief with someone is, how's the self-regard? Because if the self-regard is low, even though this is just self-feedback, it can be hard to look at the rest, right? Sure. So, you know, so I sort of walk into a situation, if I'm working with a group, assuming that everyone is there to learn, everyone's there to grow, everyone's there to be open. And then if there's someone who seems to be having a harder time with that, what I'll do with that person is focus on the strengths, which is a, you know, great place to work anyway. And
always
to just start talking about, okay, you've got a really high, ability to tolerate stress. You've got really high optimism. You've got really strong ability to reality test, which is to sort of check out the stories we make up against reality. How are those skills serving you? How are you using them? How could you use them even more effectively? And sometimes that'll kind of open up. But I use a lot of intuition in this work because sometimes it is hard for us to do that self-reflection, to give ourselves feedback, and to stay up and positive.
Yeah, we're all works in progress. And, you know, I say this often on my shows, Liz, we're all works in progress. And at any given time, we're all dealing with crap of some sort. Life throws us curveballs. So, you know, I might end up in your class and I'm just having, you know, family stuff with mom and dad, and I'm being pulled in a million directions, whatever's happening in my life, that I'm not going to be as receptive as I might've been a week ago or a month from now. So I, you know, everybody, we have to be kind to ourselves because we really are works in progress. And that means we're works in progress, right? We don't expect this perfection. You learned it. Why aren't you perfect at it? It's about practice and curiosity and digging in and trying that. And that didn't work and that didn't feel good, but I love this. And right. It's that reiteration. That pivoting, that shifting, that finding, I think, our inner self, whatever that is, from a leadership standpoint or a sales standpoint or a coach standpoint, et cetera. Why do you think EQ, emotional intelligence, is so important for leaders now, like mm-hmm. now? Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Well, as I was listening to you talk about that, and you were saying, you know, if I'm sitting here and I'm being asked to do this reflective work, but there's something going on in my life, I've got family stuff, I've got pressures, there's been something disruptive in my own life. As you said that, I thought, okay, right now, that is every single person on the face of the planet.
Exactly.
Here we are. There is no one been significantly disrupted in the last 2 years. Have gone through something massive together. And we've all had really different experiences. That I have colleagues who have lost many family members. Yes. I have folks who have experienced mental health crises in this time that I think has been really isolating for a
lonely.
Lot of people.
Yes.
Of course, there are a lot of people who are in conflict with their family over different concepts of the pandemic and what it is and all of that.
Vaccine, not vaccine, all of that, right? Everybody has an opinion for themselves. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then I think about what I see as I have a good colleague and partner who who refers to the other pandemic, which is that we are in a period of reckoning about racial injustice in this country. And that is leading to healing and transformation for some organizations. It's leading to a lot of backlash and pain and trauma for other organizations. The latest figure that I saw was that 97% of Black workers have said that they would not like to go back to the office. Thank you very much. And I think, of course, because what do you experience when you get there? And, you know, the folks I work with, queer leaders, it's a lot of the same for a lot of us, for trans, non-binary, genderqueer folks, for, you know, just for just queer identified folks in very straight environments. So, you know, this, in this moment, I think a lot of us are really hurting. The world as we know it has changed fundamentally.
Yeah.
And we have, you know, the World Economic Forum is talking about this moment as the Great Reset. And what they're saying is, okay, we've now been working from home, many of us, for the last 2 years. We've had a lot of innovation to get through this pandemic. We've had a lot of transformation. Right now, at this moment in time, there is nothing we couldn't deconstruct and rebuild anew, because the foundation for change is right here. So if we want to change something about our economic model, we can do it. If we want to change something about how our cities work, we can do that. If we want to change something about how we lead and how our organizations function, this is the moment to do it. And so I think, you know, we use EQ to get through it. And it's also a moment where we can really choose emotionally intelligent leadership in a way that we have not been able to do before.
Yeah, amen. And it's so funny. I recorded a show a little while ago, and on my other show, Enlightenment of Change. And my guest is, she helps you move your energy, right? To clear out blocks on money or, you know, bad relationships, that kind of thing. That's her zone of genius. And as we were talking, it's so funny how we are all the same, right? And we're all living the same thing, believe it or not. And that's what she said. She goes, this, what's happening now is identification, and it's loud and it's ugly. It's needed for us to be able to come through the other side, because if we don't ever feel it, right, see it, breathe it, live it, we can never change it. So she said, right now, exactly what you said, we are all going through it. And that's why, you know, the media leans one way, or a political view leans another way. And, you know, an elderly person responds this way, and we're all amplified because we need to be, to create the change that we're on the precipice of creating. And at the fundamental level, you're right, at the economic level, at the state level, the federal level, your personal level, your family level, right, of values, whatever it is, we are at the precipice of change. But things have to get really, really ugly before we can move through it. But that's life, right? How many people, you know, I have a colleague out in Oregon, and a client, and we were talking one day, and lost her business. But the cause of all the stress of her fighting for that business, right, it wasn't meant to be, she should have walked away. But that fight, and until she got sick, she got cancer twice. And until she addressed it, now she's living a beautiful life, right? She's making more money than she could have ever have imagined, doing something she loved, helping businesses not fall into the traps that she fell into. And her health is back, but she had to go through that pain and angst and just loathing of self. And now she's like, but look at the other side. Like, I needed that. That's what I think we're all going through. And I agree. I think that, you know, that clarity of the 15, and you have this assessment, I think that's such a wonderful tool for us to get real with self and say, I think I need to grow this, or, you know, wow, I'm really good at that. How can I leverage it more, right? To use it to the advantage of me, my team, my business, my company, whatever it might be. Yeah. I love it. Now, you mentioned, do you have anything to add before I ask my last question?
No, go ahead.
So you mentioned briefly in that, you know, your answer there, which was so beautiful. And here I was talking to someone spiritual. Now I'm talking to someone who's like, man, it's about EQ and leadership, right? So different schools, if you will, right, or approaches, but the message is exactly the same. So that really touches me because we really are all the same. And I wish everybody would start thinking that way and get rid of all of the biases that are out there. Listen, I know that Connie's being Pollyanna right there with that comment, right? Because we're on a journey, but we're all on a journey together. And I wish we could see that, you know, at the soul level, right? That's what we're talking about. But here's my last question. You mentioned queer leadership. Tell me what that is and your choice of working with that, really that specialization for you. I want people to hear these different perspectives because that's how we learn from each other.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I will tell you, I have been after one crisp, concise definition of queer leadership for a long time. And I think I will be after it for the rest of my life.
Because, not an easy answer, my friend.
You know, well, because it's not a singular answer. And I think that's maybe the simplest thing we could say about it. And I see this the more and more I work with my clients on what is queer leadership. We're not a monolith. We have such different experiences. Some of us came out in very young into a lot of trauma. I was working with a client yesterday who didn't come out until he was 31. Wow. And I've known folks who come out even later in life. Yeah. And some of us have multiple coming outs. We come out around our sexuality at one age, and then we come out and we realize that we're transgender or we have a different gender identity later. So there isn't really one queer experience to give us one queer leadership. But here's an exercise I do with a lot of my clients. We talk about what has been your journey around your identity or multiple identities that you hold. And what can you take from that journey that informs your leadership? And so I'll just share for my own example, when I came out, I was in college. I realized that I was not straight. I dated a couple of women and then dated someone who was genderqueer. And I did not have a name for my identity. And this person said to me, hey, you know, I know you're probably looking for a name for your identity. And let me just tell you that I think you're going to have a lot of partners and friends and community in your lifetime who are going to be transgender. They're going to be non-binary. They're going to have really rich gender expression. And you will probably have really rich gender expression. So I'll just tell you, I've known a lot of people who have identified as lesbians, who have realized later, who have later had kind of a crisis of identity when their partner has transitioned, for example. So just something to think about, maybe your sexuality doesn't need to be a binary identity. And I think about that moment all the time because my experience of my own queer identity, my sexuality, my gender, my whole life has really been about shifting away from binary thinking. And so part of what I bring to the table as a leader is how can both of these things be true at the same time? How can we do both A and B as a team at the same time? What would it look like if we chose a really expansive option instead of, you know, I imagine, you know, you have a lot of folks who are in sales who maybe have, okay, there's solution A or solution B. And those are the things that my clients can choose from. Well, what if your clients didn't have to choose from two things? What if your clients could choose the solution that really worked for them? So that's part of what I bring as a leader. But then I had a conversation with someone a couple of weeks ago who his queer leadership strength is I can sail right through really complex, dense situations where there's not a lot of information, because that's what I had to do as a young queer person. I Wow. didn't have queer people to look at. So I had to find my own way. And that's what I do as a leader. So when I think of queer leadership, it's not just saying we want LGBTQ people in positions of leadership. It's there is something, there are many some things about us that, like a lot of marginalized groups, like BIPOC leaders, like leaders who have disabilities, there is something about queer people that positions us to be incredible, authentic leaders. So that's what I work on. That's where I play. That's where I spend my days. It's kind of ruminating on what are all of the things that a queer version of leadership can be.
And it's so interesting. And see, I love meeting people who really stay in their lane, right? So it's not just generic leadership that you're working with, this very specific population who went through, I'm not going to say similar, but probably not always, right? But similar experiences because of their own uncertainty growing up, depending on how family responded, all those things, right? Here's the thing. It's so funny. I've been doing this show for 11 years, well, not this show, but my other show. So I've been podcasting for 11 years. You can imagine the number of people doing a weekly show and now two weekly shows, the number of people I meet. And no matter what the topic, spirituality, leadership, queer leadership, parenting, we're all figuring it out, right? And I go back to what you said before. We were all impacted by, like, nobody escaped COVID. Nobody escaped COVID. And that unity that we're feeling, right, from COVID, like my other guest said about the spirituality piece, right? We really all are one. We need voices, though, like you, so that people listening could say, well, that makes sense. Of course, that's going to impact how they lead and the empathy they bring to the table, right? Me maybe growing up in a big Italian family. Well, yes, that's going to impact how she deals with him, right? So I love having different perspectives so that people can stop, not judge, but say, oh, that just makes so much sense. I never thought of that being a female. You know, I often share the story when I first started, I was told we can't promote you into a sales position because you're a girl, right? It's impacted how I, you know, responded. I became, I think, tough in business because I thought, you're not going to hold me back, right? I'm going to show you came through. Well, that impacts how I lead, right? So we've all experienced stuff, but until people hear our different stories and the different challenges that being in like in your case, that was a wonderful exchange that woman had said, or I'm assuming it was a woman, but that person had said to you because they were a little bit ahead of you in the experience mm-hmm. to shed some light on that and how profound it was that you're mentioning it in a show. Like we all have those moments, but we have to be understanding of each other's and perspectives and how we were, all those things matter, and it matters from an emotional intelligence, but also a leadership perspective. I love it. I love this. I love your perspective and how you have really, you're staying in your lane because you will make a huge impact. And that's a beautiful thing, right? That's what we're all here to do, Liz. Just excellent. So thank you for sharing and being vulnerable and sharing your story, right? And that story with us and why you're doing what you're doing and how you're trying to change the world. It matters.
Thanks, Connie. Thank you. It's it is why I do this work. It's what I get out of bed for in the morning. So yeah. Thank you.
And here's the thing. It's your expertise because you're living that life, right? Like I couldn't tell you how to be Italian. Well, I probably could because the food's really good. No, but you know what I'm saying? You didn't raise maybe in an Italian house. Like you'd look at me like your family's out of their freaking minds, right? So again, this is the point in my show, Liz, I swear to God, it's not good or bad, right or wrong or judgment. It's about, you can disagree with my perspective or Liz's perspective, but I hope you pause and thought, oh, I never thought about that. Oh, that's an interesting take on that. Oh, it is a more expansive conversation, right? That's the point of this podcast, is to expand our perspective. And I hope to expand our tolerance with everybody in the world, because we've become very intolerant of humans, and that's just not okay again, right? Of what we're talking about. Thank you for sharing. And again, I love what you're doing, man. Keep rocking it. Keep staying in your lane, baby.
Thanks, Connie. Thanks so much for what a great conversation today. A couple of my favorite topics, and just great to talk to you about them.
I learned a lot about emotional intelligence, so thank you for that too. Again, right? It's always about hearing and learning information and then applying it. And that's how I'm going to end the show for my listeners, right? I hope that you will join me weekly as we question, build, and discover together, that my guests, myself, our conversations, really explore them with curiosity, not judgment, and see what you learn. That you can, learning information is wonderful. I say this at the end of every show, Liz. They're like, yeah, we know, Connie, right? But learning information is a fabulous thing. We want to be lifelong learners, but I'm all about the application. So what did we talk about? No matter what perspective you're coming from, doesn't matter. Emotional intelligence, you're a leader. What did you learn today that maybe you could bring back to your team immediately, if not tomorrow? That's where change starts to happen. And that's where the magic starts happening for us as leaders. So I'm going to end on that note. Liz, thank you again. Truly an honor. I love hanging out with you, my friend. I wish you all an inspired week. Please take some of the recommendations about the emotional equation or the emotional intelligence that Liz and I spoke about and try it out. See what happens. Report back. I love to hear. And I will see you all next week. Again, I'm honored that you're on this journey with me. And I will see everybody next week for a new topic and more inspiration. Thanks, everybody.